From Post Media, I'm Ewan Plater, and this is XY, a show about mental health in men. Welcome back. This week we'll be sitting down with Oscar-winning director Orlando von Einsiedel. Today's episode is one that I was so excited to get into. Orlando is someone whose work really does speak for itself, with his two biggest projects being Virunga and The White Helmets, both documentaries, I might add, if you've not seen, are definitely worth a watch. That said, in my interview with Orlando today, I wanted to speak with him regarding a more recent project titled Evelyn, which was named after his brother who tragically committed suicide many years ago. The documentary is, in no uncertain terms, one of the hardest and most emotional watches of my life. Not just because of the subject matter, but because of its honesty. The film follows Orlando and his family as they walk around the UK's countryside and unpack the baggage they have surrounding the suicide of Evelyn. To be totally honest, I was super nervous to meet Orlando. I felt like I was walking into his office to ask him about something so personal and harrowing that I wasn't really in a place to do so as a stranger. But as you'll hear, Orlando was so open with me and I left with a real sense of admiration for the guy. Not just because of his warm nature, but because of his candour and honesty about the entire ordeal. As always, today's episode is not to be taken as advice. This is just a conversation between two people and should be treated as such. If you are looking for some support, I've left the details of some really great resources in the show notes, including those of Time to Change, the mental health anti-stigma movement with whom I have partnered for the first series of XY. More specifically, I wanted to draw attention to their Ask Twice campaign. Sometimes we say we're fine when we're really not. To find out how our loved ones are doing, their campaign urges us to ask twice. A simple, are you sure you're okay, can make all the difference. Okay, that's enough out of me. Let's get on with the show.
Okay, cool. Could I just get you to say anything into the mic just so I can see if there's a level coming
one,
through?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay, fantastic. Right, so just to kick off then, I wanted to, in a bit of a nutshell, could you give me a bit of a background on how you got here working in film today? How did you start out and what is your career so far looked like?
Sure. So I have a very strange route into the film world. Once upon a time, I was a professional snowboarder.
I saw this.
And the way you get paid as a snowboarder is you get sponsored by a clothing company or a snowboard company, and then they give you a little bit of money to travel, and so you're doing competitions and photographs, but then you get a bit of extra money every time you're in a magazine or a video. And what that, funnily enough, does is it creates this incentive for you and your friends to all learn how to take pictures of each other and film each other, so that you can get an extra 50 quid. I learned how to take photographs, I learned how to film, and one day I realized that I almost preferred the filmmaking side of snowboarding to the actual act of snowboarding. Yeah. But I always knew I wanted to make films about things that I cared about. Yeah. And so that sort of segued into documentaries eventually.
And I think this is it. For me, everything that I've seen that you've created really does revolve around the plight of a person or persons. And was that always a guiding motif for you in terms of helping your fellow man or documenting the story of your fellow man? Just seems to really resonate with you as a creative.
The answer is sort of yes and no. So when I began to make documentaries, the first ones I made were more sort of journalistic investigations.
Yeah.
And you know, you'd find some sort of terrible injustice happening somewhere in the world, you'd go and you'd explore that and investigate it and try to bring somebody to account. And they were very difficult, often very depressing films to make. But while making those, we'd often come across really incredible people whose story, you know, they weren't the focus of our story necessarily. I always thought, well, I'd like to be making a film about your story. And I'd never read your story in the newspaper back home. You know, when I read about Afghanistan, it's all death and destruction. I learned about a skateboard school in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And it sort of brought together my past of skateboarding and snowboarding, and also it was this positive story. It wasn't about death and destruction. It was all about little kids learning, getting an education, learning to skateboard and sort of beaming full of hope and unity. And so I went out and made that on very little money. And we put it on Vimeo, and it went viral.
So you just put it out there?
We put it out. I mean, there was a small release with Dazed and Confused magazine who we made it with. Yeah. But it sort of went viral on its own because it didn't have money for advertising. Yeah. And it was like a light bulb went off in my head, thinking there's other people want these types of stories too.
Yeah.
And that actually became the guiding light for a lot of, I guess, for the next 10 years of my career. It was trying to tell the stories of people that inspire me, that make me want to be a better person. Now, it happens that those are often in places where there are real difficulties happening, but the guiding principle was incredible people.
That's a pretty beautiful way to spend your day as well, because what you said is it's not actually about the focus of the creation is not the plight of somebody suffering. It's actually the inspirational light that exists in amongst the turmoil, which pretty special way to spend your day, is studying that kind of content.
I feel, I mean, every day we're making those sorts of films, I feel very lucky, and I don't take it for granted. And actually it renews your faith in humanity every time we go and make one of these films.
Yeah.
It's so easy at the moment, especially with all the news around the world, there's just so much bad stuff happening, you're bombarded with it. And then we get to go and we make these films about people that are just, whose lives are infinitely more difficult than mine and virtually everyone I know. And yet they just represent the best of what human beings can do. And I find that, that's really inspiring.
Well, yeah. And I definitely walked away from Virunga and the White Helmets not feeling depressed about the situations in which they reside, but actually quite inspired by the people behind it. So I guess that is the takeaway from all of that. That's like a really positive perspective to have on what you do and on the stories that you tell. One of the things that I kept coming back to when I was getting ready for this interview was the osmosis of the environment that you're in. For you and your mental health, how do you walk into these situations, albeit with a view to studying the beauty of humanity? How do you walk away from those as unscarred as possible? Because it's a lot to deal with, watching them for 90 minutes, never mind living in the East Congo for 2 years.
I mean, it's an interesting, if you'd have asked me 2 years ago, I probably would have given you a very different answer. I used to think I probably handled it all really well and just sort of buried it inside and concentrated on making the film and didn't get involved too much in getting upset, because that would kind of get in the way of making the film.
Yeah.
I now realize that was probably a really unhealthy thing to be doing. And that's come from making Evelyn, actually, and understanding a bit more about myself and how I've tended to handle difficult situations in my own life.
Yeah.
Me and Joanna Natsagawa, my producer, we'd just released our film before Evelyn, which was a film called The White Helmets, which is about rescue workers in Syria. And we launched it at this film festival, and we were talking about what we were going to do next. And I was pitching to her a series of projects, which frankly were very similar to Virunga and The White Helmets. They were about people in difficult situations, kind of overcoming them and fighting for what they believed was right. And to me, it seemed out of the blue, she said, would you ever consider making a film about your family? And I knew what she meant by that. She meant really a film about your brother. And I was completely taken aback, because in the 7 or 8 years that I've known Joanna, I'd never, ever had a conversation with her about Evelyn. I wasn't surprised that she knew, because she'd probably heard from somebody, but I was amazed that she'd asked me. And actually I was angry
at her asking the question.
I was thinking, we've never had this conversation, how dare you think that I'd make a film about it? Like, what where are you going with this? Like, and I shut the conversation down immediately.
Even just hearing you talk about it actually makes me feel quite anxious. I can imagine the situation of you sitting there.
But from Joanna's perspective, it wasn't an out of the blue question. When we were making White Helmet, she'd noticed something. She's incredibly perceptive. She'd noticed that after a difficult day of filming really difficult things, a lot of the crew, everyone would cry, and at the end of the day, and talk about it. And she just said, "I never saw you ever do that. I never really saw you talk about what we'd all experienced that day."
Uh-huh.
And I think she felt there was this clear kind of blockage and in me in some way, and put two and two together and thought maybe it's something to do with what happened 13 years ago. I shut this conversation down, and then I started to interpret why I'd got so angry that she'd even asked.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's not right. She's just asking. I shouldn't be angry with her. And then bizarrely, on that day that she asked, and there's no way she could have known, it was also the anniversary of Evelyn's death.
And it's serendipity,
just,
isn't it?
Well, precisely. Yeah. And it just kind of suddenly felt, actually, maybe we should have the conversation at least.
Yeah.
And then the more we talked about it, I started to feel actually this could be a really good thing. And I mean, the funny thing is, I thought there's no way my family would ever agree to it. So actually, it's kind of a safe. We'll have a conversation. This will never really actually happen.
Yeah, you can go through the process of saying to yourself that you've tried to go through it, but actually you'll never need to step in front of a fucking
exactly.
camera. So.
Exactly. And then, yeah, but bizarrely enough, a year later, we were there.
There was
a camera rolling.
Shit.
Oh my God, what am I doing?
I guess one of the things that I picked out from what you just said there is that anger response you had when Joanna first brought up making the film, and then you went away and thought about it. For me, that comes from that vulnerability that a lot of us don't want to dig into. And a real common theme throughout the entire making of this podcast has been that men in particular suffer from a lack of ability to be vulnerable in the public space. Specifically with you, why do you think vulnerability is so hard for guys?
Well, if I talk from my personal point of view, I think there was really two things that sort of blocked me. The first, it was, I guess, and this definitely comes back to a fear of being vulnerable. But it also comes from a sort of ignorance of how emotions work and maybe how grief works. I thought that if I even have a conversation about Evelyn and what happened, that will trigger some enormous waterfall of emotion that I don't know if I can then shut off again.
Yeah.
So that sort of terrified me to even go there with a conversation.
Yeah.
But then, and I suppose this is almost the more pervasive one, is, and I find it really strange to talk about now, because I think about, even when we were making the film, I think about who I thought I was, and I thought I was a modern man with modern ideas about emotions. But when I actually came to it, I really deeply harbored all these ideas about showing emotion in public as weak.
Yeah.
And that was a block to talk about this stuff. I was scared to do that. And that to me now seems ridiculous.
Well, this is it. And it comes up in the film at one point, and it's the only time in the film I sensed even a hint of defensiveness, where you're having this conversation with one of Evelyn's close friends and you say to him, I don't care if you think I'm weak. Like you actually do have this moment where you almost, that looks like, at least in the film, is the point of realization in your life where you're like, okay, so maybe actually, despite not intentionally being this machismo alpha male, I do have some baggage when it comes to this topic.
100%. I mean, that conversation in many ways radically changed how I think about so much.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone needs someone like Leon in their lives who will gently push and push and push in a way to, I think, make you realize things that makes you go to somewhere where you don't really want to go to, but he's actually doing it in a because he knows that you need to go there.
And what I really loved about that scene is not only was it real in the sense that you actually do have this real human interaction with another human being and your emotions develop in the course of those 10 minutes, but Leon in a lot of ways embodies the polar opposite of what you expect vulnerability to look like. He is the dude's jacked. Like he's this like big, strong guy. I mean, he's the one talking to you about the importance of it. And I just thought that was a really beautiful interaction and a really beautiful scene in the movie in terms of breaking down those barriers. I guess outside of just vulnerability as an individual topic, why does the media, or what role does the male image play in the media today for you?
Well, I mean, I would say there's definitely a change now.
Yeah.
You know, people are talking about this. I think a lot of people understand, even if they maybe haven't gone through that process themselves to really believe it, but they understand that it's not necessarily a sign of weakness to talk about emotions. In fact, it's actually a sign of strength, because it's, in reality, it's proven to yourself that you can talk about whatever, and you're okay with it. So it's not, it's the it's the polar opposite of
weakness.
Of weakness. So I think there is a change, but you know, these things take a long time to change. I mean, you know, we all grew up on action movies.
Well, this was
people of our I'm 38, so I grew up on real men are tough. They're Arnold Schwarzenegger. They are,
yeah, completely.
They don't cry. They, you know, it's whatever, what they flex their muscles and, yeah, you know, puff their chest out and carry on. So it will take a long time, but I like to think that the younger generation are much better at doing this stuff. Yeah. And actually, from showing the film to younger people, seem so much more in tune with it. I don't think they find the film challenging in a way that people older than me, you know, yeah, we've had quite strong responses from people in their sort of 60s and 70s who think, who really don't get it, and are like, well, why do I need to see a load of people being emotional, a load of men being emotional? That makes me feel so uncomfortable. I don't like this film. I can't yeah, deal with it, which has been fascinating. Whereas young people, no one's ever said anything like that.
Yeah, I guess you don't know what you don't know, and you can't feel what you don't feel. So I find that really bizarre. I'm not going to call myself a young man, but I find that really bizarre that somebody would feel almost angry at the film, that I don't want to feel this. I don't want to. It's kind of like the response to that Gillette advert, you know, where being made to feel awkward about yourself feels like a personal attack.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that I did want to ask was, who's the subject of Evelyn, the movie? Like, what's it? Who's it about?
So, that's a good question.
Yeah, like I've discussed it so much with my wife.
I would, well, if you'd have asked me just before we started, I would have said it's sort of an equal split between me, my brother and my sister, mm-hmm, and then Evelyn as well. In making the film, it became so painfully obvious in some ways that I guess I was the central subject, because I had the biggest emotional journey to go through,
yeah,
in some ways. So I think if I look at it now, I think actually I'm probably this, in filmic terms at least, I'm the, yeah, subject. I don't think that emotionally, you know, but in filmic terms, yes, I would be the key subject. And actually, it was, in some ways, it was the crew, it was Joanne, it was everyone else forcing me to realize that, even though, 'cause I was pushing against it so much.
Well, yeah, I bet,
because it felt so uncomfortable to admit that.
Well, when the credits roll and it says you directed it, obviously, and you created it, that was basically the conversation that I was having at home, was, I think this film's about Orlando, but I don't think Orlando made a movie about himself. You know, I feel like that came out in the wash of the whole process versus you setting out to, but I wanted to ask you that question because I wasn't sure if that was, yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, funnily enough, the first version of the film that we edited wasn't that version. The first version of the film was very much an equal split between, yeah, me, Gwenny and Robin, and it didn't work, it didn't gel, it didn't go there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we kind of tore that to pieces and rebuilt it.
And for you as an individual, and the reason I keep saying for you as an individual is there's actually quite a lot of facets to the movie, insofar as you guys could have just gone on a walk. You know, you didn't need to make a movie about it if it was just about you, which makes me feel like there was a philanthropic element to it, where you wanted to create something that would be good for other families going through similar stuff, or other young men that felt depressed or suicidal. Is that the case?
Well, the all of the films that me and Joanna work on together, that is, there has to be a social issue that we deeply care about,
yeah,
that we also want to put our film at the service of that issue, and use the film to try and change the needle in some way. So that, from our perspective, that is very much was a driving motivation. Fun enough, when it came to my sister and my wider family, they only really were up for doing a film because they knew that that's how we worked. And,
yeah,
you know, I remember my sister saying very clearly, she said this to Joanna as well. She said, I'm only interested in doing this if I'm only interested in sharing our pain and our story if it can potentially help other people. I have no interest in being in a film otherwise. We can all go on a walk,
yeah,
and talk about this because we need to.
Yeah.
But if the cameras are going to be there, that's the only way I'm going to be involved.
And that's great for society. But you personally, did you have a desired output of the film / the walk? Was there a goal for you as an individual where you said to yourself, I want to feel X way by the end of this?
That's a really good question. I think I went into this, I went into this naively in lots of different aspects, but I had a very simplistic idea about grief, I think.
Yeah.
And I thought, we'll go on this walk, we'll talk about things we've never talked about, we'll all come out wonderful and changed at the end, and it'll all be happily ever after. Now, the film, doing the walk, has massively changed me. I don't say it lightly, it's changed my life in many different ways.
That's amazing.
But not in the way that I maybe expected it to. Okay. And grief is so much more complicated than I thought it would be. And it's not linear. It's not quite as simple as you talk, you're better, you move on. There's one thing I came away with is it never goes away. When somebody dies, it's always there, but actually talking about it and coming to terms with that and understanding it, it makes it easier. Makes it enormously easier to handle. And I came out of this with, I had no relationship with Evelyn. I didn't think about him. I'd basically forgotten every single, almost all the positive memories that we shared together. I just remembered all the really difficult negative things, because that's, I think, the way the human mind works. That's what stays in your head.
Yeah.
And I came out of this and I had this relationship with my brother again. And I could remember all of the amazing times that we spent together. And, you know, so that...
What a fabulous output of the whole process for you to reconnect with your brother.
Yeah. It's been extraordinary. And of course, it also brought us all together so much closer as a family too.
And as a family, are you still talking today? Is the practice of engaging in conversation continued?
Well, my family have been, so my sister's living in the United States at the moment, and my brother is sort of split between here and Scotland. So we haven't, it's actually been a while since we've all been together.
Yeah.
But we did on the anniversary after the walk of Evelyn's death, we went for a big walk all together, just the three of us together again. And we spent the day talking about things, and it was great.
Well, yeah, I think that's great to hear, because that was the first thing at the end of the film I thought is, has this catharsis created a trend in your life? Which it sounds like it definitely has. So that's great to hear. One of the most striking elements of the film for me, which I can't imagine you could have planned, are the people you meet along the way. And without spoiling any of the film, because if you've not seen it, you should go away and watch it. You meet people who are literally walking the opposite direction from you throughout the trip, and almost everybody has this similar story to your story, which in some ways makes your story feel super special, because this act of walking is actually highlighting a lot of different tragedies. But in a kind of beautiful way, it means that your story is not special. It means that everybody's got these griefs and these tragedies that when asked, they're willing to talk about, but actually it takes it to pull it out of somebody. Could you talk a little bit about that process of meeting strangers?
So I if I talk in filmic language for a second, this is basically a road trip movie, right?
Yeah.
It's a documentary, obviously, but it very much fits into that sort of genre of storytelling. And one of the key things of those sorts of films is you meet other people along the way. And I remember having this conversation with Joanna when we were sort of planning the project. I thought, well, we can't, it's not, there's no guarantee we're going to meet strangers. Maybe we need to organize some people we know, or, you know, mental health experts or whatever to bump into on the way. Not that we'd fake it, but we'd bump into them and walk with them. And
totally.
And she said, I think we should just trust. We should just trust that we will meet people.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, you sure? And she was like, yes, let's just have faith. So anyway, I always thought if that doesn't work, we can plan it, you know, 2 weeks in. And anyway, on day one, it's not actually in the film, but on day one, we finished the walk. It was a really difficult walk, and we stopped at this bar, and the bar lady, you know, all the camera team were there, and the bar lady said, what are you guys doing? And so I was sheepish. I didn't really want to admit everything, but I sort of said, oh, well, we're doing this walk and memory of our brother, and he took his own life. And she sort of froze, and then she said, oh, well, I'm and this was in the north of Scotland. She clearly had a sort of accent from the south, and she said,
yeah,
oh, well, I've only been here for 3 months, and I'm here because my brother took his own life, and this is his bar, and we could, as a family, we couldn't face, wow. He'd worked here for 50 years or whatever, we couldn't face letting it go, so I've come to run it. And then we had this amazing conversation. And then that happened most days, because people would see the cameras and they'd say, what are you doing? And I think going back to your question, there's this really amazing thing that if you show vulnerability and emotional honesty with a stranger, anybody, it's almost this amazing invitation for them to, it's almost contagious that they will immediately share something.
Their story back.
Their story back. And it's, I think two things come out of that. One is that almost everyone's going through some difficulty in their lives.
Yeah.
Because that's, I suppose, the human condition. But the other thing is it was extraordinary just how many people we met who'd experienced or been touched by suicide. And I think that shows just how prevalent mental health problems and suicide actually is.
When I launched Post Media and I was trying to pick what show I wanted to kick off with, I had a few different options on the table, started speaking to potential guests for a few different shows, and XY, which is the one we're doing now, every man, gentleman, guy, every person that I spoke to wanted to share their story. There was this super strong reaction, whereas I thought people might be a bit closeted to open up and be vulnerable, but it was almost as if by saying I wanted to shine a light on the vulnerability of young men, people were so eager to share their story, which is kind of akin to what you've said in terms of meeting strangers, your vulnerability, unlock their vulnerability, which is super cool.
Well, I think if we go back to I think we feel better as people when we can talk openly.
Yeah, completely.
But you know, because and we talked about this earlier, but you know, the way society brings up men, or at least has done in the past, at least for the last 50 years, maybe, that it hasn't been safe to talk about that stuff because there's been a taboo to it almost. Yeah. But actually, it's a much nicer place to be when you can talk about it. So we'll hopefully all be happier and more open if we can continue to have these sorts of conversations.
And get over this, whatever it is that we've got.
Yeah.
I've only got a couple more questions, but one of the things I really wanted to touch on was, if you are the subject of the film, for me, the hero of the film is your sister. I think she's such a brave and incredible human being. And what was you said, for example, with the white helmets, you didn't cry at the end of the day, you kind of boxed away emotion. What was your modus operandi with regards to your mental health and the topic of mental health prior to your sister calling you and saying, I need to speak about Evelyn? What was your go-to in terms of that?
Well, I didn't really think about it, if I'm honest. I for me, because I guess because of Evelyn and seeing what had happened to, you know, to my brother with having a mental health problem, it became, mental health was basically, anything to do with it was terrifying.
Yeah.
And my sister talks about it in the film, but I was exactly the same. If there was an article in a newspaper about mental health problems, I just immediately skip past it.
Yeah.
So I never really thought about it. I didn't really think about taking care of myself in any way. And in some ways, I mean, people have said, oh, they've looked at this film and then they've looked at the previous films that we've made and said, oh, well, it's so obvious that you just ran away to war zones and made films about other people's problems and that was a way to escape. I don't think that's the case.
No.
I don't think it's that clear cut, but I would probably say there is a sort of strange comfort in some ways about hiding behind other people's problems.
Yeah.
Because there's no space then to ever talk about your own because they feel insignificant.
Totally.
In the kind of films that we were making, people are going through the most traumatic things that you can even imagine. And then to suddenly talk about your own problems just feels selfish in some ways.
Completely.
So I just never found myself in a position to ever have that conversation.
I
guess didn't feel I needed to in a weird way.
Yeah.
But I think I did.
Well, I think, yeah, definitely. I think we all do. But yeah, you are right. In terms of, for lack of a better word, priorities, if you're in Eastern Aleppo, your mental health is probably not the most pressing issue. It feels almost glib to say, I wonder what people's mental health is there, because how could it not be horrific? You know, they're in probably the most dangerous place on earth right now. So yeah, it's a good place to be if mental health is low down on the the agenda of things to talk about. That said, really bizarrely, on the way here, I was flicking through Instagram and I got served an ad from the UN, who are appealing for donations now to support with mindfulness for kids and refugees, which is a super exciting thing to see, I think, because it's less about water, food, shelter, obviously absolute mandatories for humans to exist. But it was nice to see, especially coming here today, that they're now appealing for more psychological benefit for kids. Because I think that is such an important thing to be pushing as well. It's not just about getting these people shelter, it's about making them feel human again. One other thing that I wanted to ask you while I've got you relates to the impact that the film's had. So what kind of impact do you feel that sharing Evelyn with the world has had?
Well, I think we've been completely blown away by what the film has, I guess, how the film has resonated with people. So Joanna runs a company called Violet Films, and they, as well as making films, they also specialize in devising impact campaigns for films so that those films can go out into the world and try and make a difference. And we've been working with a number of fantastic partners, from Calm, The Samaritans, who are bigger organizations, through to small grassroots ones like Andy's Man Club, and also the Ramblers, because of the walking
which is a great initiative, which I hadn't heard of until I saw Evelyn.
So, and we've been doing a lot of screenings around the country, and after some of the screenings, we've also been doing these walks where people can kind of carry on the conversation, which has been extraordinary. I suppose it's, in some ways, you know, I think the things that have really stayed with me, when people see this film, it sometimes creates an opportunity for them to talk about the things that they've bottled up, and it might have nothing to do with mental health. I think every family has things that they don't talk about. So that's been extraordinary. Sometimes the Q&A sessions of the film almost become these sort of therapy sessions where people start sharing. We've been really, I mean, the film was on the BBC 2 weeks ago, or BBC Two, and we were completely inundated with messages. This wasn't an intended consequence of this film, but we've kind of been shocked by how many people have written to us and said, after watching the film, I was thinking of taking my own life, and after watching the film, I could never go through with it because I've seen the damage it does to a family. And if you guys, 13 years later, are still so grief-stricken from this, I can't put my own family through that. And I think that's the sad thing, is when you get to a point where you're thinking of taking your own life, most people generally believe they are a burden on everybody, and actually them leaving this world is going to benefit. And obviously that's completely not the case. It's never the case. Yeah. But that, you know, and so that's been extraordinary.
That's fantastic.
I think it's been really emotional, actually, reading those messages. I guess on a smaller level, you know, we always hoped the film would help break down the stigmas about talking about mental health, and definitely anything around suicide. And, you know, we'd like to encourage anyone, if you're worrying about somebody, to reach out to them, because actually just getting in touch with someone at the right moment can save somebody's life. But also, if you're feeling down, then you should, don't be afraid to talk, you know, just reach out to somebody, and there's so many great organizations you can talk to.
I've got one final question, which so far has been called Cliche Corner. That term may or may not make the final cut of these episodes.
Okay.
But if you could give your younger self one piece of advice, what would you go back and tell young Orlando?
Well, in the context of, I mean, there's probably a lot of things I could go and tell young Orlando, but in the context of this conversation, I would, you know, we waited 13 years to have a conversation about our brother. That was such a terrible thing. I wish we'd have done this so much earlier.
Yeah.
I think it we all got so much out of it, and transformed us all in so many ways that I, you know, the idea, if I was reliving it, the idea that I'd close that box for another 13 years is too much to even think about. So my advice would be, I wish you'd have done that walk 10 years ago.
Open up sooner. Okay, Orlando, thanks so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure catching up.
Thank you so much.
Brilliant, thank you.
You've been listening to Orlando Van Einsiedel on XY with me, Ewan Plater. I certainly hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I enjoyed making it. And if you're liking what you're hearing, then make sure to go rate and review us on wherever you get your podcasts. If you're new to XY, then I'd thoroughly suggest you go back and check out episode 1 with the amazing Jim Chapman. That's all there is for this week, but I hope to see you again soon. Bye for now.